A sure way to get people fired up is to talk about smoking, or more specifically, the rights of smokers versus the rights of those around them. Hi, I'm John Schwantes, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, an expert panel will discuss, and no doubt debate, the push to ban smoking in most public buildings across the state. Does government have a responsibility to protect non-smokers from secondhand smoke? And if so, should enforcement take place at the state or local level? Should a smoking ban apply to all establishments, even those that by law cater only to adults? And finally, what impact would a statewide smoking ban have on the state's coffers, that's COFFERS, and in the end, should that even matter? All that and more on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park. Four locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
This is the fourth time that Representative Charlie Brown has introduced legislation to ban smoking in most workplaces and enclosed public settings in Indiana. The measure has passed the House, but it's never made it to the governor's desk. This year, encouraged by bans imposed by more than two dozen other states, Brown is hoping for a different outcome. And Governor Mitch Daniels has indicated he'll sign the bill if it gets to his desk. Will this be the year that Indiana says no to smoking in public places? Joining me to talk about the issue, the person I just mentioned, Representative Charlie Brown of Gary, the ranking Democrat on the House Public Health Committee, Representative Steve Davison of Salem, the Republican vice chairman of that committee, Danielle Patterson, Government Relations Director for the American Heart Association and chairwoman of the Indiana Campaign for Smoke-Free Air, and Don Marquardt, president of the Indiana Licensed Beverage Association and owner of the Timbers Restaurant and Lounge in Angola. And I thank you all for joining us for this discussion.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Charlie Brown, we'll start with you. Now, you are a mental health professional, so why do you want to bang your head on the wall year after year?
Interesting question, and I wish I had a more appropriate answer. But without a doubt, there's no rhyme or reason for Indiana lagging so far behind in adopting a comprehensive no-smoking piece of legislation. North Carolina has done it. When you think of Chicago and New York, the tourist capitals of the world, both of them have done it. It has been proven that it does not have a long-lasting impact on the restaurant and bar establishments. What is wrong with Indiana then? Why is it that we always are bringing up the rear? There is no answer other than the total resistance to assisting and providing comprehensive assistance to the Hoosiers of Indiana. I would venture to say that 99% of folks, if they had all of the facts about the impact on their health, the impact on businesses, would say, yes, Indiana, you need to do that.
Well, let's start with health concerns, and then certainly we will get to some of the other important issues here, such as the philosophical considerations that I know you want to engage in that discussion, certainly, and also the political realities of this debate. But let's spend a moment on the health issues. As Charlie Brown mentioned, that's one of the motivators here, if not the primary motivator, I assume. Mm-hmm. Steve Davison, you are a pharmacist. You're professional. You're a healthcare provider.
Right.
I don't think you smoke.
No, I don't.
And you basically don't want people to smoke around you,
Absolutely.
Right? So you have no doubt that smoking and secondhand smoke is a detriment to an individual's health, is
Absolutely.
That right?
Absolutely. I agree pretty much with everything that Representative Brown just said about smoking. It's unhealthy. I work every day trying to get people to stop smoking. I participate in a lot of smoking cessation programs. You know, I would encourage everyone to quit smoking. I understand the health problems, the health costs. I see it every day. And, you know, from that standpoint, I support it, the principle of the measure. I just have troubles with the vehicle.
And I know we'll be getting to that,
but
and I know you have some strong sentiments
later,
about that, certainly. Daniel Patterson, you spend a lot of time preaching about the dangers of tobacco and secondhand smoke.
Exactly.
Just how bad is it? I mean, can we stipulate, I suppose, it's pretty bad? What is it, the numbers I've seen, 5 million U.S. citizens die of because of smoking each year, and another 600,000 from secondhand smoke?
Is that right? And not to even mention the children that are exposed to third-hand smoke when their parents go into bars and restaurants and or gaming establishments, and they come home with smoke-filled clothes. I mean, so now there's even evidence of third-hand smoke even affecting cognitive development of children. Pregnant mothers will ultimately have low birth weight babies, not to mention the heart attacks among non-smokers. One of the most impressive benefits that we will see from a smoke-free law is a reduction in heart attacks among non-smokers, and also we would lower asthma visits, where people will automatically have an asthma attack. That will be lowered too when you pass a smoke-free law. Within a year, you'll see at least a 17% reduction in heart attacks among non-smokers.
Let's bring you in here. You've heard three people basically bash smoking from a health standpoint. Are you going to jump on that bandwagon? I mean, are you a smoker? I should ask.
Have never smoked in my life. I think it's obvious the effects of smoking, the health costs that the state of Indiana incurs by it. Yes, we're definitely in 100% agreement, but you know, I think really what the discussion should be is probably cigarettes and smoking, and that, you know, we're more concerned, I think, about second and third hand effects than the actual product itself. And the state of Indiana is dependent on the taxation from cigarettes, and we continue to sell it. It's a legal product that you have to be an adult to buy it, so we feel that if you're an adult and you can buy it, that you should be able to enjoy the product.
All right, so we have, health is off the table. There's agreement on that. So now we get to the real crux of this discussion, I think, which is certainly the philosophical aspect of this. Charlie Brown, now the bill, of course, has been amended several times already in the process to add some exemptions, and we'll get to those, but the original intent. It is to ban smoking from most public places, public places, workplaces certainly, within 12 feet of an entrance to those facilities and within state-owned vehicles.
Right.
What's the penalty for violating that in the legislation as introduced?
Infraction, and enforceable only by the being reported or the workplace persons indicating that they have some violators there. So that's kind of minor, the penalties on it. The real issue is whether, in fact, we want Indiana Hoosiers Hoosiers to be healthy, and whether we feel that it will have a negative impact on revenue for the state of Indiana and for those businesses that would have to abide by that law.
And it's that concern about revenue impact that drove, by all accounts, the push for amendments that we've seen thus far. The bill in committee, of course, was amended and came out of that committee on a 9-3 vote, but not until casinos and pari-mutuel tracts were exempted. That was a result largely of a legislative services agency estimate that would put a dent of about, what, $180, $190 million in the state's coffers in terms of tax revenue. Was that what caught your attention?
That was, for me, not particularly. That is one factor to consider, though. But, I mean, you know, I stand more on against it on a philosophical level.
Well, jump in here.
I believe that, you know, in the personal liberties of people, and I think that, you know, as it's a legal activity and a legal product, and we complain constantly about the federal government overreaching their bounds, you know, putting things on us, and you know, here as a state government, maybe we're doing the same thing. In a way, we're putting this particular overreach on our local communities, and I think that the vehicle for this, I would see this more as being done by local. You know, a lot of cities have done it, a lot of towns have done it. I think that's a good way to do it. I think that the people at the local level have a greater grasp on their local politics and their local views. I think they have a better pulse on their communities. And I think things are done better from a local level on those types of things. You know, I just have a problem with, as a state, us trying to tell someone who owns a business that they can't allow themselves or other people in that business to practice a legal activity with a legal product. That's how I feel about it. I mean, I I would rather see a vehicle used, like, for instance, what we were talking about, the actual problem of cigarettes. I would rather see us increase, like, the smoking cessation programs, education, and try to actually reduce smoking in the state altogether from the roots. I think that's the core of the problem. I mean, that's where we're going to really cure the health issues, because these people that smoke at the bars or at casinos or wherever, they may not be able to smoke in those casinos, they may not be able to smoke in the bars, but when they go home, they still smoke in their home with their families. So we're still having that second and third hand smoke that we were talking about that still gets into your into the population.
That notion of right. having somebody, government, tell a private business owner,
exactly.
That really is what gives you pause. Daniel Patterson, what about that notion, A, that it should be the prerogative of the business owner to determine what goes on in his or her establishment, and B, maybe this is better policed, as the representative suggests, at the local level, where there is more of a finger on the pulse, as he says.
Sure. It's an interesting argument, because one of the things that we know that the business community is very concerned about is health care costs. I mean, when you look at the fiscal for the bill, where casinos may lose $180 million, we're spending $390 million treating this problem. So we're way outspending. We're addressing this issue by our tax dollars. I mean, we're covering these people that do go, that work in bars and restaurants. We're not talking about customers and consumers. We're talking about actual workers who may not have health insurance. So therefore, their problem will become our problem in terms of taxpayers. Another thing, when we look at local governments, the problem we have is we do have a number of ordinances throughout the state, but they're different in each community. And it is because different communities decide what's best for the politics of that community. But when you go from Fort Wayne to Angola, people don't know, oh, okay, this side of the street I can't smoke in. I can't smoke in the bars and restaurants, but I can go across the street. What we're saying that if we pass a statewide law, we're equalizing that.
Although,
so that people will have a place to go. They will be able to go to all bars and all restaurants and not be exposed to secondhand smoke.
A devil's advocate here. If the bill, I believe, as it was introduced, now maybe this is not the case now, but it would have the overall prohibition, but local governments would be able to impose even stricter standards. So you might still have some inequities. Is that correct?
You will have inequities, but you will have inequities when it comes to maybe outdoor areas, smoking in cars with children. But the floor will be set. All restaurants, bars, hopefully gaming establishments, private clubs, nursing homes will be protected. So that will be the floor. If local communities do want to go a little bit further, most of the places they'll look at, again, would be smoking in cars with children. It would be outdoor areas. But everybody will have the same equal protection within businesses.
And Don Marquardt, you drove the longest to get here, so we got to hear from you.
Thank you.
You know, the notion here of there being certain exemptions. We talked just a moment ago about casinos and the adjacent holdings of those casinos. Another, that was at the committee level. In second reading on the House floor, we saw another amendment, another exemption, several in fact, and that would exempt bars that cater, of course, to adults 21 and over, fraternal organizations, Elks Club, the Moose, that sort of thing, and then nursing homes. Good idea on all three counts, or...
I'm going to leave the nursing home discussion for somebody else, but it's been a large concern of the state of Indiana about the casino and casino revenue. And fortunately for the casinos, they have the ability to come up with studies, to pay for studies and to show, and because you have a finite number of a very finite number of casinos, they can accurately report what the effects are going to be on their revenues. LSA did not prepare a statement to show what the effect would be on restaurants and taverns. And there are these studies that we continue to hear about that prove that there's no reduction in revenues for restaurants and bars. And it's just not the fact. And what you have to do, you have to get out in these communities. And Fort Wayne's a great example. Fort Wayne passes a comprehensive smoking ordinance, and New Haven doesn't. So everybody flocks to New Haven. And the New Haven bars are doing great because they don't have the smoking ban. And you have states where that impose smoking bans, and then you go across the state lines to places, once again, that don't have the smoking bans. So there's great inequities within the state, and this law was not going to focus on controlling those inequities. But the casinos have the momentum. They can prove their losses. We don't actually have just the study to prove it. That's why I urge legislators to go talk to the local bars and restaurants and see what they feel about it. But we, you know, I have to agree that if it's an area where you must be 18, and I think that's where the decision needs to be, is at either at 18 or 21. If it's an establishment where you have to be 18 or 21, 18 because that's when you can, that's the legal age to buy cigarettes, that in those areas, that should then be the business decision of whether you want to allow smoking or not smoking. And then consumers have the right to go into that establishment or not. And many restaurants and some bars have already gone non-smoking, and those are the areas where the smokers or non-smokers would go to. And it's and you know, we're
John, let me just ask you just one thing, Representative, if I could follow up. You mentioned about driving customers potentially to other jurisdictions or other across state lines, but you have, for instance, up in your neck of the woods in Angola, Michigan has a ban, Ohio has a ban, and if somebody really wants to drive across the toll road and get over to Illinois, they have a ban. So do people, are you worried that people just stay home then or not go to the bars or taverns at all?
That's definitely a concern. Actually, throughout the years, more and more people are staying home and not going out to restaurants and bars for numerous reasons. But the state has passed the 0.08 driving and a BAC. And it's really hard to tell this consumer when you reach that level. So people drink less when they go out. So then you pass a smoking ban, and that reduces revenues of bars. So there's just many legislation has been passed that affects our revenue.
Charlie Brown, I cut you off. Go ahead.
The math alone tells you that it will not be a lasting effect. Only 24% of Hoosiers smoke. That leaves you 76% of Hoosiers that would probably say, hey, that bar, that restaurant doesn't allow smoking now. I will now go there. That's why that argument just blows my mind that I'm going to lose money if we have a statewide smoking ban when the majority, overwhelming majority of Hoosiers do not smoke. Why has it not had a negative impact on Michigan, Illinois, Ohio, New York City, Chicago, all with comprehensive bans, and you don't hear this hue and cry from business owners there that, my, I'm going to have to close my doors?
I guess, Steve Davidson, you'd say it doesn't really matter if you have a fiscal impact or not, because it's more of that notion of business owners' rights.
Well, it is, but yet also what Representative Brown said just made sense just a minute ago, is that if there is 76% of the people that don't smoke, we could impose a smoking ban just from a market-driven basis. I mean, if people that don't smoke say, I'm not going to go to this business because I don't want to go to a place that smokes, this business is going to say, wait, we're losing 76% of our business because we're only getting the 24% smokers. So, you know, they will come around and see the light that maybe I shouldn't, you know, maybe I should prohibit smoking in my establishment, and I'll pick up that 76% of customer base. I mean, you know, that's another point to look at. And, you know, I'd like to say also that, you know, once I believe in the philosophy that one size doesn't always fit all, and that we are a diverse state. We have a lot of different interests within the state. And I think that, you know, that's why I think each community maybe has a better pulse on what's actually going on and how their particular constituents and how their citizens feel about the ban.
So I have to agree with that, too. The studies show one thing, but the logic isn't there. If 75 or 80% of people don't smoke, then that's what business owners would do. I mean, business owners want to increase their business. They're not going to keep smoking because it's detrimental to their business. They would change and become non-smoking. And once again, many places are. Many chain restaurants have already become non-smoking. And more every year, you see business owners switching over to non-smoking when that's in their community, when they see that that's the need they need to fit.
The consumers could drive the market if they wanted to. The non-smokers could band together, and they could be a force to drive the market in that direction.
Daniel Patterson,
okay.
What do you say?
Sure. There are a couple of things I definitely want to respond to. One, when we talk about that there are no reports from the restaurant and bar industry right now, what you're hearing are these anecdotal stories where they go in and business owners say, oh, it's going to hurt my business. That's just like me when my boss said, well, you know, I'm going to give you another project. And I said, oh, you don't know. That's too much on my plate right now. I can't take it. It's an anecdotal story. When you look at the reports out of Michigan, when you look at the reports out of New York, where the restaurant and bar industry was not impacted, you could look at Fort Wayne, look at the bar and tax receipts from the auditor's office, and it showed that there are no significant impacts on business once a smoking ban has been passed. That's what you have to focus on. And again, as a business owner, that does make sense what Representative Brown is saying. When you have 74% of the population that don't smoke, you're focusing in on a smaller population that do smoke. It just doesn't make sense as a business owner to just focus yourselves on just a small group of people. And you're right. Businesses, there is a lot of government involved in business. But when it's also businesses that are saying to government, you know what, our health care costs are high, then you have to take the step to help us drive that health care cost down. And one of the ways you could do that is for businesses to get behind and say, you know what, we do need a comprehensive smoking ban. We do need to fund tobacco prevention and cessation programs adequately. We do need an enforcement campaign to keep youth from smoking. We do need an aggressive marketing and advertising campaign so that we can educate people about the perils of smoking. When we do all of this, then we could start to see a decrease in health care costs, specifically that $390 million.
Well, as I told you, time does run fast at these discussions. It goes by like that. Maybe we should drive up to the Timbers and continue the discussion up there. Final question, though, real quick. If this doesn't pass this time, coming back for number five?
I certainly will.
All right.
Never give up.
All right. Well, we will keep a close eye on this this issue, certainly as it travels through the session over the remaining 3 months or so. Again, my guests have been Democratic Representative Charlie Brown of Gary, Republican Representative Steve Davison of Salem, Danielle Patterson, Chairwoman of the Indiana Campaign for Smoke-Free Air, and restaurateur Don Markhart, President of the Indiana Licensed Beverage Association. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, we'll examine the General Assembly's efforts to plug a $2 billion gap in the state's unemployment insurance trust fund. To join the discussion or pose a question for our guests, visit the Indiana Lawmakers discussion on the WFYI Facebook page. Each week, I'll select one of your questions for our panel of experts. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, and a man often described as smoking, though not in the literal sense.
I think that's smoke and mirrors, John.
Let me ask you about the politics of this issue. You know, if you look at the vote in committee and you look at the vote on the amendments during second reading on the floor of the House, this was not a partisan issue. Is it fair to say that this is not a Republican versus Democratic issue?
It is absolutely not a partisan issue. It is more of a philosophical issue and to a certain extent, too, an economic issue, but really philosophical. And a lot of people just don't want, as Representative Davison was saying, government to intervene in every aspect of their lives. And they feel that government should stay out of certain business kinds of decisions and let the businesses make those kinds of decisions and set those rules and rubrics themselves, and they're voting that way accordingly. But even then, you still don't see total unanimity among, for example, the freshmen who are just elected in November, who are elected on that kind of a philosophical framework of sorts. Some of those did vote for the smoking ban on some of the second reading amendments and even in committee.
Which do you think has the bigger impact in terms of the fate of this legislation? Is it the philosophical issue you just discussed, or is the other one you also mentioned, and that is the price tag that LSA and others have attached to this in terms of the casino industry and potentially taverns and restaurants and whatnot as well?
I think it's a combination. Some people will not even look at the economics of the situation because of their philosophical bent on this, whether it be in favor of smoking, allowing smoking because of the general philosophy behind it, or against smoking because of the public health reasons. But in terms of those who are looking at it on an economic basis, I think you also see a divide. And part of that is the money that would be lost to the state simply because of the casinos and the estimates from the Legislative Services Agency that show as much as $190 million in foregone state tax revenues. And that's just too much for people, even people who
might otherwise believe in the public health aspects of this, too much money for them to forego. Others say, you know, yes, we are needing to look at this on an economic basis, but we need to look at the fiscal impact to the individual business owners, the Don Marquarts and his people of this world, and looking at it from that perspective as well. So there are really all kinds of different ways that people are coming to this measure on.
You know, it used to be that the killing fields, if you were, for this legislation, it always came out of the House, always died in the Senate. But Senate President Pro Tem David Long has said he's inclined to give it a hearing as long as the casinos exemption is in place. And the governor has said he'll sign it. How important are those two factors in this discussion? Well,
very important, because it's always had a tough road to hoe in the Senate. And I think the more exemptions that come into this bill in the House, and the more that might be introduced in Senate committees, the better the fate that awaits that bill in the Senate. But I think that what will happen ultimately is that this bill, the parameters will be largely decided in conference committee, and it's going to look far different than the way that it looked passing either chamber.
All right. I didn't hear any smoke or mirrors. That was a straight fact. So thanks, Ed. Appreciate it. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.